The trade data that we got out for March last week was still, you know, fairly robust.
Trade concerns not affecting China's economy. It's Wednesday, April 18th. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, the saga of a detained American in China, immigration in the courts, Australia's ivory trade, a shortage of women in computer science, selfies immortalized. It's all on today's VOA Asia. China says its economy has expanded 6.8% in the first quarter of the year, the same pace as the fourth quarter of 2017, and follows last year's gross domestic product of 6.9%. But Singapore-based economist Julian Evans Pritchard of Capital Economics tells VOA's Victor Beatty there are signs of weakness in the world's second-largest economy and views the 6.8% official rate as overly optimistic.
We have an alternative measure of growth, which shows growth at around 5% at the moment. But at the same time, a lot of the slowdown on our measure happened at the end of last year, not so much at the beginning of this year. And conditions do seem to have stabilized somewhat in Q1. So as far as kind of the official GDP figures tell us anything, you know, one area that is interesting is the breakdown. We don't have the full breakdown yet, but the sort of top-level breakdown in terms of industry services suggests that there was a slowdown in the service sector, but that was offset by a pickup in industry. Our view is that that's been helped to a large degree by the easing of pollution controls, which disrupted industrial activity quite significantly in northeast China. Those controls are now being eased, and you can see it in the air quality readings, which have deteriorated, you know, significantly in northeast China recently. So a lot of that industrial activity is coming back, even though other parts of the economy aren't actually doing as well. You know, property market still cooling. The infrastructure is slowing as governments are paring back their spending. You know, they're coming under pressure to control debt levels. You know, even on the retail sales front, although we had a strong number for March, you know, once you strip out, you know, the pickup in inflation that we've seen over the recent months, actually real retail sale volumes have been trending down since the middle of last year.
What role, if any, Julian, will trade tensions with the U.S. play going forward in China's growth?
Well, I mean, one interesting data point out today was that, you know, manufacturing investment's been, you know, recovering until recently, but the last, you know, few months, there's been a bit of a drop back, a deceleration. I mean, that could be caused by many factors, but obviously one possible explanation is that there is a heightened uncertainty over the outlook for global trade and U.S.-China trade in particular that may be starting to weigh on manufacturing investment in China. In terms of the risks of a trade war with the U.S., I mean, at the moment, obviously the tariff measures being proposed are just proposals, and you know, the trade data that we got out for March last week was still, you know, fairly robust in terms of China's export performance.
Julian Evans Pritchard, however, said should up to $150 billion in tariffs come into force, it could shave up to 0.5% off of China's GDP, and the effects could be damaging if they are sustained over years. The big question, he said, is just what are President Donald Trump's goals in confronting China, and will trade tensions escalate? As for China's economic performance going forward, he said while China's 2018 GDP forecast has been set at a modest 6.5%, Capital Economics expects actual growth to be closer to 4.5%. These are among some of the top Asia stories currently trending on VOAnews.com. North Korea tops Trump-Abe agenda. South Koreans may visit North again ahead of first summit in decade. Relief agencies prepare Rohingya refugees for monsoon threats. Myanmar's president grants amnesty to 8,500 prisoners. China confused about Trump's currency manipulation charges. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. According to the Associated Press, Chinese-American Christian humanitarian worker John Sanxiang Chao was sentenced last month to 7 years in prison for organizing others to illegally cross the border, a crime usually meted out to human traffickers. Chao was arrested more than a year ago as he and his co-workers crossed a river separating Myanmar, also known as Burma, and China's Yunnan province after decades spent building schools, helping earthquake victims rebuild, and strengthening unofficial house churches. Chao, who was born and raised in Hunan province, was converted as a young man, retained his Chinese citizenship, married an American woman, went to seminary in New York, and pastored at a church in North Carolina. His family has been unable to speak with him since his arrest, and two sons, seeking a lighter sentence for their father, are now speaking out. One of them is 26-year-old Amos Chow. He's a graduate student at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, and spoke with VOA.
My dad's work has always been in the southern Chinese region, not just because he's from southern China himself, but specifically in the Yunnan province. My dad and some other people have worked in that area for quite some time, a couple decades, whether that's making some Bible schools within China or using that as a starting point to gather resources to proceed with humanitarian stuff, whether that's in Myanmar or they went to Laos and also Nepal after the earthquakes to do some house building, some just like direct structural alleviation of the damage that was there. My dad's always been really interested in helping people through education. That's something that he taught me at a very young age. The root of change happens through education. What he was doing in Myanmar was school building. And after finishing these schools and getting them operational, they were turned over to the Myanmar government. So they had a very good working relationship with the Myanmar government, had the permission to be doing these school buildings of the Myanmar Ministry of Education.
The problem began in March 2017 when he was crossing from southern Myanmar back into China. Amos Chow says it's plausible that his father was singled out to be made an example based on his efforts.
This is possible. The border crossing is something that people do all the time. The consequence for actually doing this border crossing is relatively minor. It's just a few hundred yuan. But regardless of what the actual reason is for his detainment, the actual reasons are still unclear.
U.S. government officials are aware of the case and are working to help.
We've had a lot of assistance from the U.S. government in terms of not only navigating the situation in terms of understanding the process, but the legal process and kind of a political process. But I don't think that I can comment on exactly what the government is doing.
What are you hoping will actually happen?
What I'm hoping will actually happen is that people within the United States will take notice, first and foremost, that this is a unjust punishment for something that my dad is completely innocent of. And then to that end, we can have some sort of leverage from the United States, because the United States, as a country that has championed ourselves for rights for others, not only within our own country and other countries, should take notice and should actually do something about it. So whether that actual dialogue between politicians from our country to the Chinese country, specifically about my dad or specifically about relationships in general regarding humanitarian work, it's something that needs to be talked about.
A U.S. State Department spokesman told the Associated Press Washington is deeply concerned about the Chow sentence and has called on China to release him. Tens of millions of Chinese are believed to be Protestants, and the country is on track to having one of the world's largest Christian populations. Happening now in Asia, at least one protester was killed when a riot broke out during a protest Tuesday in the Pakistani city of Karachi in response to the rape and murder of a 6-year-old girl. More than a dozen people were reported injured during the protest, mostly police. Angry protesters accused police of negligence in the case. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thank you for listening. The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that a provision of the immigration law that requires the mandatory deportation of immigrants convicted of crimes of violence is too vague to be enforced. The decision involves James DeMaya, a native of the Philippines who came to the United States legally as a 13-year-old in 1992. After he pleaded no contest to two charges of burglary in California, the government began deportation proceedings against him. The government argued, among other things, that he could be removed from the country because his convictions qualified as crimes of violence that allowed his removal under immigration law. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Stephen Vladek, a law professor at the University of Texas, about the ruling.
The key is the statutory term the court was dealing with is a provision that allowed for the removal of any non-citizen who had committed a, quote, crime of violence. And there's, I think, a really open question about just what a crime of violence is. So, you know, if I rob a bank without threatening anybody, is that a crime of violence? If I, you know, steal property, again, you know, with a knife in my wristband but never pulling it out, is that a crime of violence? And so it's not as broad as it sounds. It's very specific about this one category of removable offenses. And what the Supreme Court said today was Congress has to go back to the drawing board.
What does this do to the Trump administration policy and words about making it tougher and tougher for the immigrants who have committed a crime to stay in this country?
Well, I think it does, you know, both a lot for some groups and nothing at all for others. So it's still the case that any immigrant who commits what's called an aggravated felony, which is a much more clearly defined category of crimes, can be removed. And it's still the case that non-citizens who are out of status, who are undocumented and not lawfully present in the United States, can be removed for committing any crime. So this is really about a very specific subset of cases where you have non-citizens lawfully present in the United States who commit these crimes that are not aggravated felonies and that are not clearly crimes of violence. That's not an empty set. I mean, I think we are talking about, you know, hundreds, if not a couple of thousand cases. But it's not, I think, going to be a real stumbling block, a real roadblock for the Trump administration's, you know, newfound aggressive approach to immigration enforcement.
How did this case get to the Supreme Court?
So the case actually came from the Federal Appeals Court in San Francisco. It was actually a ruling by a very well-known Court of Appeals judge, Stephen Reinhardt, who just passed away. And the case actually got to the Supreme Court a few years ago. It was argued to the court before Justice Scalia died. And then after Justice Scalia died, the Supreme Court had the case held over, presumably because the justices who were left were divided 4-4. The new justice, Neil Gorsuch, is the one who provided the tie-breaking vote today, joining with the more progressive justices to strike down this federal statute.
If somebody's listening to this throughout Asia or around the world for that matter and have relatives here who might have been arrested for a speeding ticket or something like that, what do they have to fear?
Yeah, I mean, I think today's decision, I think, clarifies that non-citizens of the United States don't lose normal constitutional protections, like the right to have fair notice of what the consequences are of their criminal actions, just because they're non-citizens. And so, although I think the practical implications are actually going to be fairly modest, I think the broader principle it reaffirms, especially at this moment in time, is a really important one.
I take it this is not the last such decision. Maybe some other decisions on a broader application of this are in the pipeline that you know of or not?
Yeah, I mean, just next week, the Supreme Court is set to hear oral argument on the legality of President Trump's so-called travel ban, with a decision in that case expected by the end of June. So, you know, I think this is an important development for U.S. immigration law. It is by no means the last we are going to hear from the Supreme Court during its current sitting about the scope and validity of what the Trump administration is doing.
Stephen Vladek, law professor at the University of Texas, speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. The decision does not interfere with the government's ability to deport people who are convicted of clearly violent crimes, including murder and rape, as well as drug trafficking and other serious offenses. In a statement released Tuesday, the Justice Department called on Congress to close criminal alien loopholes that allow immigrant criminals to escape deportation. Coming up, Australia struggles with ivory. You're listening to VOA Asia.
From Pink to Pitbull, Beyonce to Bruno Mars, the hits live here on the Top 20 Countdown. Hi, I'm Ray McDonald, and for the past 30 years, I've been counting down the very best of the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart. The hit list never sleeps, so don't you miss a moment of the action. Join me every Thursday for the Top 20 Countdown, right here and worldwide on the Voice of America.
This news from VOA Asia. Taiwan's new president is making her first trip to Africa this week to visit one of the island's two remaining allies on the continent. Support for Taiwan has diminished in Africa over the past decade as billions of dollars in Chinese investment have flowed into the continent. Visit VOA Asia Facebook. It's your ally for reliable news and information. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, a parliamentary inquiry into Australia is investigating whether the domestic and legal trade in ivory is contributing to the deaths of thousands of African elephants each year. From Sydney, Phil Mercer investigates the story.
Members of Parliament are investigating if lax regulations are allowing recently poached ivory to be passed off as antiques in Australia. It's illegal to import ivory into Australia, but there are concerns black market ivory is being smuggled into the country. Campaigners argue there's clear evidence poachers have been using Australia to offload elephant tusks from the illicit trade in ivory into the legitimate art markets. In the past decade, more than 320 imported and 79 exported items made of ivory have been confiscated by Australian authorities. Labor Senator Lisa Singh is part of the investigating parliamentary committee.
I think ultimately Australians don't want to be contributing to this ongoing trade of rhino and ivory in our country, knowing full well that that leads to the death of thousands of elephants and rhinos across the globe.
Britain, the United States, the European Union and China have all limited their domestic trades of ivory and rhino horn in recent years. Australia's parliamentary inquiry will look at a range of options, including a total ban on the sale of all ivory and horn items. The UK has made exemptions for rare and important items more than 100 years old and for other pieces of art that contain only small amounts of ivory. It's a move that Australia should follow, said Patricia Anderson, a gallery owner.
What happens when a family wants to sell grandma's piano with the ivory keys? What happens when someone wants to sell granddad's walking stick or Aunt Flo's chess set?
It's estimated that 55 African elephants are killed by poachers each day for their tusks. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This news from VOA Asia, Myanmar's new president announced an order to grant amnesty to about 8,500 prisoners. The move coincides with Myanmar's traditional New Year. A spokesman said the amnesty includes 51 foreigners as well as 36 people listed as political prisoners by a Thailand-based watchdog group. You'll find a wealth of stories and features at VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, in the United States, less than 18% of the women who graduate from college majors in computer science. The shortage of females with computer skills comes at a time when there are a lot of jobs available in computer science, a field that pays better than most. VOA's Elizabeth Lee looks at the cultural and other reasons for the shortage of women in this important area and what one university in Los Angeles is doing to inspire girls.
This is a sneak peek into the near future at the kind of robots that may be a part of life. 11-year-old Haley Tott drove 2.5 hours with her family to get here.
Not many girls and kids are in robotics.
The University of Southern California is trying to change that by hosting a robotics open house every year. Students from first grade through high school and beyond are invited to look inside the labs and see the latest research on robotics.
You have to tilt this way first.
We feel that if the kids can actually see the robots, hear the PhD students and the faculty members talk about what their research is and why it's important, how robots benefit society, we see through experience that the kids get really excited.
The hope is that excitement will motivate young students, especially girls, to learn how to code.
Coding's like the necessary second language that everybody, especially this generation, is going to need. You know that there's fewer people, especially women, majoring in computer science in college now than there were 30 years ago. And there's so many jobs.
So this knows if your hand is very close to it.
Not seeing the real-life applications of computer science may be one reason why fewer women choose this subject.
Some of the reasoning or research behind it.
That was the case for Caitlin Claybaugh, who was studying fine arts and never thought about computer science until she saw how relevant it is to helping people by using creativity.
When there is a clear application to a real human usage, and it's sort of bridged the gap for me, right? I was interested in the arts, I was interested in all these things, and then I found that I could create with computer science.
Now she researches how a social companion robot like this can help children with autism.
Definitely focusing on special needs is very special to me. I've struggled with dyslexia my entire life.
Dispelling the myth that coding and computer science is a lonely pursuit is another way to attract girls. USC works with area schools, its teachers and students to try and fill the gap in hopes of attracting underrepresented students, including girls, to choose computer science in college. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
One popular application of technology has become a social media phenomenon around the globe. We're talking about the selfie. While it's considered bad manners in some places, there's a venue in Los Angeles where it is welcomed at all times. Jenya Dulo visited the brand new Selfie Museum.
We like to think that the selfie is an invention of the 21st century, but it's not. Founders of the newly opened Selfie Museum in Los Angeles set out to prove that people's desire to have pictures of themselves goes back hundreds of years. Roman Emperor, the Mona Lisa, self-portraits by Durer and Rembrandt, the black and white photos that adorn our grandparents' bedside tables, all point to the long historic tradition of the selfie.
I think the realization that selfies are not new. People like to say they're new. Paris Hilton likes to claim she invented them. And while she may have made them more famous, they're definitely not new. People have been obsessed with self-imagery and taking their pictures or drawing themselves since people began drawing on cave walls. People have been drawing human figures. Only thing that's changed in that entire time is the technique and the technology.
Today, you don't have to waste hours sitting for a portrait. The camera on your smartphone will get you a good quality picture in a split second. Didn't like it? Simply try again.
I see pictures as capturing memories, and selfies are very convenient because you can see how the picture is going to look before it's being taken.
And it's also very fun to see you take 70 pictures of yourself to pick that perfect one, because I know we all do it. I definitely do it. And when I find that perfect one, it always makes me really happy.
According to Instagram statistics, one of the most popular selfie spots is the gym. There are more than 2 million pictures that have a hashtag gym selfie. Equally popular is taking a selfie in a car or in a bathroom, which has been used as a selfie background more than 1.3 million times. This surprised the exhibition curator so much that they decided to have a special installation in the museum, a bathroom with no mirrors. They hope that makes visitors think about how far the selfie obsession can take a person. But apart from that, museum founders have gone out of their way to provide all sorts of breathtaking selfie backgrounds. Among them, the top floor of the tallest building in the world, Dubai's Burj Khalifa, and the Iron Throne from Game of Thrones. It doesn't really matter that neither of these is real. What matters is that such a selfie will no doubt get its owner likes galore. Jenya Dulo for VOA News, Los Angeles.
We'll have to check with Jenya Dulo and see if she took a selfie at the Selfie Museum. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can find our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can also find us streaming on Facebook and our website, voanews.com. You can hear us on the radio. If you're in Thailand, check us out on Chiang Mai University Radio FM 100 at Chiang Mai University. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Kelvin Fowler, for today's program, along with managing editor, Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, David Bird, and Ira Melman on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.